Now the Lord said to Abraham, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed." And so Abraham went. How wonderful to be invited. How wonderful to be encouraged, to have the promise of a blessing for daring to go on an adventure and step into the unknown. What a thrill to seek new horizons and marvel at our own capacity to say, "Yes, I will go." The poet and singer Facundo Cabral, reflecting on the Lord's words to Abraham, says, "I am a nomad made of salt and wood, in love with the dust of the roads. I build my house day to day, and I destroy it again when the sun proposes otherwise. I am a nomad who came to tear down the walls, which out of fear the coward built up. Light soaks my spirit completely, and the trees and the birds echo me, echo my hope. I am a nomad who, because he always leaves, he is always returning, because everything is circular, and the sun knows this like no one else does. Here I have arrived. You awaited me without me or you knowing it. I'm not from here. I'm not from there. I don't have an age. Being is my color. Being is my identity." In the past year, we have seen the cruel enactment of Muslim bans, DACA rescinded, and an end of the temporary protected status that affects 60,000 Haitian refugees, and El Salvador is next. There are journeys which are unexpected, involuntary departures that uproot our very souls. We immigrants came to escape persecution, poverty, torture, disappearance, hunger, broken dreams. We came to work, to build communities, to fall in love, to help our relatives. Being undocumented, we have had to hide our true selves and live in fear. We have been turned away at the health clinic, our children denied education, our families living in constant fear of deportation and being torn apart. These are the involuntary exiles, where there was no invitation, no promise of a blessing, only uncertainty. And yet we are border crossers, the people of the borderlands. We are not from here. We are not from there. Here we have pitched our tent among 11 million seeking sanctuary and a second chance at life. I remember living in New York City in the hollow of a subway station. I would swallow my tears every time the street musicians would play the ancient tunes of the Andes. I remember riding that subway with 100 other strangers, holding on, being propelled forward, underground in the semi-darkness, all of us becoming the pulse of that city, our nostalgic hearts beating underground, trying to remember, trying not to forget, holding on, holding on. For years, I thought this involuntary exile as the saddest part of my life story. But I have come to realize that this experience is a blessing, one of the greatest blessings that illuminates and shapes my ministry today. The blessing was in finding my own voice to tell my story, to bear witness to the suffering of others, and to advocate for all seeking sanctuary. My journey as a Unitarian Universalist has led me here to this very sanctuary. It is a place where we constantly reinvent ourselves and strive to expand the circle of solidarity and hope as we build the beloved community. In this sanctuary, we share our stories, discover our own voices, and conspire to resist against hatred and evil. Unitarian Universalists have a long history of offering sanctuary and welcoming the so-called stranger. From the Underground Railroad, to the Sharps during World War II, to our most recent statement of conscience, which recognizes immigration as a moral issue. Our own UU resolution states that, and I quote, regardless of legal status, all immigrants should be treated justly and humanely. I am so proud that we as Unitarian Universalists voted unanimously to enact and to practice this resolution. There are many direct actions we can take as a congregation, and in these efforts, we are not alone. We have here today an ally, an advocate whose ministry brings light and hope in these challenging times. Reverend Deborah Lee, we are so grateful that you are with us this morning. Together, we answer the call to open our hearts and our churches to affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Welcome.
Good morning. I want to thank you for inviting me here to share this pulpit and to bring to you a message of what the power can be of the faith communities in response to these times. The things that are going through my head at this time are really some other moments in our nation's history, whether it was the 63-year period of the Chinese Exclusion Act, the time of the Japanese-American internment, where my mother-in-law was interned as a high school student, or the times in World War II in Nazi Germany. And my question is, you know, where was the church? Where were the churches? Where were the faith communities? Where was the moral center? Because I think that's the question that is being posed to us today. We run the risk of living in different bubbles in this country, that we may, the risk of blindness to what is happening to people on a day-to-day basis. So I want to bring to you a couple statistics. I think you've already shared some of the very difficult things that have already happened in this year that we need to stay awake about. We need to come into partnership and relationship with those who are facing some serious attacks. One statistic I'd like to share with you is that the number of detentions from last year to this year is up 43%. We don't see it. You don't see massive roundups. You don't see, you know, tanks in the street. You don't see it, but they come in the middle of the night. In other parts of the country, they've come to hospitals. The 10-year-old girl who was being treated, and after her surgery, ICE was waiting there during the surgery and waiting for her to complete her surgery to take her to a detention center. To courtrooms in New York City, as they were people showing up for court, to Contra Costa County here, where the probation department was setting up stings for people who are coming in as they should be, to their probation check-ins and being led into a room with ICE. So these detentions are happening. You know, people wonder, how can the detentions be up? And it's so invisible in some way. But they are happening. And we need to open our eyes and stay awake to the ways that they're happening. The budget for detentions next year is proposed to increase and so that we can detain 48,000 people. Next year. This year, it's about 38,000. So you can see that the trend increased. 70% are being held in private prisons. I was recently, I was with a Muslim community last night, and they talked about a 57% increase in hate crimes from one year to the other. So we're at a time where it's there are very clear communities that are under attack, and the immigrant communities under attack has broadened. It's really every form of immigrants are being, there was something in the paper last week about spouses of H-1B visa holders, you know, not being able to work. So every form, and we call this a form of criminalization, a very slow creeping form of letting people know that they're not welcome and that they are detainable, which the Department of Homeland Security has said. So what does sanctuary mean in this context? Sanctuary has become a term that has political ramifications. There are sanctuary cities. There are sanctuary restaurants. There's, you know, what some people have called the sanctuary state bill that was passed this year. But I want to speak to you about what sanctuary means from a faith perspective. Because even though there are these other kinds of forms of sanctuary, sanctuary city policies, there are many loopholes in those sanctuary city policies. We're currently trying to close a loophole in the Oakland Police Department's sanctuary city policies. The so-called sanctuary state policy has 800 exceptions. If you've committed, there's a list of 800 felonies that you may have committed 20 years ago, and you could still be deported and turned over to ICE. So in the political realm, we understand there's compromise, there's things, you know, it can't be, you know, that can't happen in this political climate. But for us as the faith community, in this era, the concept of sanctuary has become a covenantal commitment. It's like a commitment of partnership to a community that we understand is being threatened. It is a commitment of faith communities to say, we stand with you. We're going to walk with you. We're going to be your neighbors. That's what you're going to do tonight when you go around into the neighborhood. You're going to say, we're here and we're going to be your neighbors because we don't know what's coming. We already saw what's happened this year, but we really don't know what else they're going to roll out in 2018. So right now, we need to make a commitment to the community to say, you can count on us. You can count on me. It's like those marriage vows. You know, we pledge to be with someone. We have no idea, like, what's going to happen in the next 30 years, right? You don't know what illness, what challenges, what threats, what changes may happen, but it's a commitment to walk closely with, to accompany, to walk side by side. So our understanding of sanctuary at this point, the number of sanctuary congregations before the election was 300 across the country. Now it's 1,000. In the Bay Area, before the election, we had 5 sanctuary congregations that were active. Now it's over 30. So we're asking congregations to make a public declaration, a corporate, conscious, thoughtful declaration of this is our identity, to be sanctuary, to walk with, to be side by side, to stand with. There are families right now that are trying to make plans. We're encouraging families to make emergency plans. Should you get put into deportation proceedings, should you not come home, make sure you have a plan, right? That your kids know, like, here's the bank accounts. Here's the bills that need to get paid. We're asking them to assign affidavits of who would be the guardian of your children. Some, believe it or not, some families don't know somebody who's safe from deportation to be a guardian. They don't know someone who's a citizen, who themselves would not be at risk. You know, so what does it mean to say, what do you need? What do you need may mean that. What do you need to the immigrant community may mean, can we come here if there's a raid in our neighborhood and we don't feel safe to come home? Could we come here and stay for 3 days? Could you help us find attorneys? Could you help connect us to resources in the bigger world? Because sometimes we can't navigate. It's a huge and complex system. Could you go to court with us? Because my own family member is afraid to go into the courtroom. We're not sure if we have the ID to get through the security at the front desk. Could you help my uncle who came through SFO and is now being detained, but they won't let him be released unless he has an address and a sponsor? So there's so many ways that we can respond. I have a handout here that talks about the four ways of sanctuary. I don't know if I should pass out now or later. And thank you. The four key ways that people, congregations in the Bay Area are practicing sanctuary are, one, advocacy. It's not just creating sanctuary in our little churches, because people need to live their lives. They need to go to work. They need to go to school. They need to go to the doctor. So how do we create sanctuary in our community, in our street? How do we create laws and practices that help protect and create a greater sense of safety that against an ICE dragnet that is very aggressive? The second way is accompaniment. Accompanying right now, most recently, the Unitarian Congregation in Walnut Creek, they had declared sanctuary about a year ago, and they had formed an accompaniment team. We asked them to form accompaniment teams. We're working right now with about 14 accompaniment teams out of congregations of five people who are willing to figure out how could they accompany a specific family or person in need. There was a person we heard of who had been detained at West County, actually from SFO, because he came in with a visa, but because he was seeking asylum, immediately transferred to detention, because in this country, that's how we're treating asylum seekers. Was detained there for 6 months before he could go before a judge, and was not going to be able to get released unless he had a sponsor. He had no family member in this country. He knows not a soul. So we asked the Unitarian congregation in Walnut Creek if they would be his sponsor, if they would find within their congregation a place for him to stay, if they would help him connect and just transition in the first 6 months of his time outside of detention. And they have done that. And I met with them all last week. So that's a form of accompaniment. The third thing is networks of protection. I think what you're doing, engaging with your neighbors and telling them, we are here for you. How can we help? Let us know. If it's childcare, if it's making copies, if it's having meetings so you can organize your neighborhood, how can we, as an institution in your neighborhood, be part of a network of protection? And then the fourth thing is housing hospitality, which can happen in people's homes for those who are asylum seekers or who are already known to the government. And we're supporting congregations making in their efforts to do that. And it can also be housing hospitality within a congregation of someone facing a final order of deportation in a last chance emergency. So those are the four ways of sanctuary. And I want to just end there by saying, when we take on an allyship with a group that is being targeted, a group that is being labeled terrorist, a group that is being labeled criminal, a group that all kinds of terrible things may be said, it means those terrible things could be said to us. Congregations say, what's the risk? They want to know what the risk factor is. And I said, think about the risk that people are living every day to go to work, to put food on our table, to take their kids to school, that being sanctuary does mean risk. It does mean that terrible things could be called of us. But we are grounded in our spirit, our spiritual traditions that call us to love the stranger, to risk, to understand that our brothers and sisters aren't just those that look like us or live in this country, but extend across borders and boundaries. And as Gustavo Gutierrez says, we don't love the poor because they're good. We love the poor because God is good. Amen.